Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday morning. Thank you for tuning in to the Naturalist Capitalist on Free Speech Media. I've got my good friend Charles Anderson of the Lone Wolf Podcast. How are you doing this morning, Charles?
Doing very well, Reed. Pleasure to be back on the Naturalist Capitalist. It's been too long, man.
It has. As anyone who's been following me for a while, you guys will know Charles, but for all you new guys, he actually started his show before I did mine by at least a few months. I don't actually know how long, but he's been around for a while, and we've been collaborating for a while, too. I've just been so busy that haven't had time to get him back, but glad to have him back on. So, Charles, just for the new people, just tell us about the history of your show. I know we were both Tulsi supporters, we were both Jorgensen supporters, and we've both been people who kind of don't always fit into a vein very well and kind of piss a lot of people off because we don't just do exactly what they would like us to do.
Yeah, so when I first started the show, I originally called my channel The Independent Report. And I tried to just do this little thing with it where, you know, I was kind of just going to come out, talk about the recent events, kind of like the typical YouTube politics show that I kind of got influenced by when I started watching, you know, indie media on YouTube. Well, you know, there were some things. I originally was collaborating with a lot of, I guess, more progressive people. One of the first guys that I interacted with was Israel from Big Talk, Little Talk. I found David Spurria. At the time, he was the radical independent. Now he's got the channel Live Free or Die. But you know, I've always considered myself independent the entire time, but eventually it got to a point where I was like, you know, I don't really fit in any real camp. I guess there's certain views I have that some people say, oh, that's a little more on the left. There's some I have that, well, that's more on the right. And, you know, I mean, my views can be changed if I get a convincing enough argument. I'm open-minded. But, you know, until I hear those arguments, I base what I think off of my experience, what I've seen in the world around me, et cetera, et cetera. So eventually I changed the name to the Lone Wolf Podcast and basically just kind of changed my style up a little bit. I just decided to pretty much come with a gloves off approach, you know, straight to the point, call it like I see it. Doesn't mean I'm right. And like I said, you know, someone has a better argument, they could always change my mind. And so that's why recently, you know, I've started trying to branch into more interviewing other people, starting to bring on some more guests. For a while, I didn't do that too much. Kind of like you, Reed, you know, I worked the good old 40 to 60 hour week over here as well. And putting a lot of editing into stuff, you know, it was just a lot more time consuming. But I've made my mind up, especially since I'm only doing maybe two or three videos a week, record one, you know, hour and a half interview and then splice it up into a couple of videos, then there's my content for the week. I still do this other thing. I'm going to shorten it down to once a month now, though. I started this a couple of months back, but one thing I've been trying to push for is if we're ever going to have any sort of a successful third-party coalition, we've got to figure out how to get unity. Okay, and that seems to be the one big sticking point to the hard working class people all across the country, left and right, you know, Libertarian, Green Party. You'd be surprised just how much the average man and woman is going to be able to agree upon. A lot of the struggles that they go through, they have in common. They just don't realize it because mainstream media doesn't want them to think about it in terms of that way. You know, keeping them divided is better for the status quo. So argue about all these different things and keep everyone separated. It's more profitable for the duopoly. So I'm trying to bring that about. Well, one brainchild I had was music has influenced society and culture a lot over the years. You know, the 60s, you had the Beatles, 50s, you had Elvis. It influences how people think. And so sometimes me or you talking will reach a certain audience. And then there's other people who just say, this is two guys talking, whatever. But if you bring music in and there's lyrics there, and then you've also got some people who listen to music and don't pay attention to lyrics. And when you start explaining it, it gives them a new outlook. So I started trying to take songs that talk about a lot of the problems that we have today and then correlate that into, okay, you know, this is how we have things in common. And so I started this Unity Through Music segment. I'm going to be doing that like the first Monday of every month. So I've started trying to do that. But, you know, some people say the third party stuff is a lost cause. I'm not going to, you know, join that camp yet. I'd like to still try to give it a chance. I don't think the people have tried to really put a real grassroots effort behind it. You know, as Jesse Ventura said, trying to gather the independents for a long time has been like herding cats. You know, so we've got to figure out a way to try to make that work. And if we can, great. I'm going to try to do my part on that, but only time will tell.
Yeah. Have you been discouraged by the quote unquote underground media that it's not really that underground? And I don't even mean just TYT or Ben Shapiro, but I mean like even smaller shows than that. A lot of them, they want to act like they're really independent and that they've got something special to say, but it's really just regurgitated information from the top of whatever camp they're in. They don't really bring anything. They don't really bring anything new to the table. Has that bothered you?
Yeah, to an extent. You know, there's a lot of shows, and I don't know if in a way they're losing their way, if their views are changing, or if the fact that they're growing and some bigger channels are then taking notice and they're trying to climb that ladder, so they're trying to stay in those good graces necessarily. But, you know, I've seen some stuff where once upon a time, you know, I won't name any names here, but shows would ask more questions, dive deeper into topics, and then as you know, I will say I've noticed this with a lot of more lefty channels, especially some that lean more right. But, you know, some of the bigger lefty channels took notice of it, and then all of a sudden they stopped asking so many questions. And to be fair, some of it might be coming from a fear of, you know, what YouTube might do to them. You know, there was right after the whole January 6th stuff, there were a lot of YouTube channels who were attacked. So, right. You know, there's question on what the motivation is. And I suppose for some of those people, you know, their channels are where they're making their money at this point. You know, they probably gave up the 9-to-5 and that's where their bread and butter's at. And they're worried that if they get completely deplatformed, then they'll have to go back to the 9-to-5. So they're trying to make that last, you know? But yeah, I mean, I'll say this, you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to be indie media, you need to be indie media.
Right.
You know, this angling to be the next TYT anchor or, you know, doing whatever you think you have to be on the Jimmy Dore show or trying to end up on, you know, Steven Crowder or something if you're on the opposite side of the aisle. I mean, if you ever get that opportunity and you want to take it, you do you. But if you want to be indie media and you're wanting to try to make people think about the issues in society today, then, you know, truly try to be different, truly try to bring about unity, try to do something to get this grassroots movement started for some change in this country.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just had a couple friends on, Clint from Liberty Lockdown and Magnus from the Unity or Death podcast. And all three of us, you know, we've done what you've done. You know, we've just said what we've thought, and it wasn't always popular. You know, it didn't always stick, and then it just happened to be the right thing said at the right time. So, yeah, just, you know, for you, I mean, you haven't caught on big yet, but just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, yeah. I mean, the right person will see it. And, I mean, these charlatans, they might make it big temporarily. But it's hard to maintain a facade if you're lying constantly, you know, like
right.
It's a lot easier. It's a lot less work to just tell the truth and tell people what you think, because you don't need to constantly be creating a narrative that you don't believe in.
Exactly. And, you know, I've said this on my channel before as well. You know, YouTube is an uphill battle these days. If my channel were to grow and take off, that's great. But, you know, I haven't put all the eggs in the basket of podcasting anyway. I still, you know, for example, tonight I'll be going in to do the dreadful third shift, which I absolutely hate, but I do it, you know. That's what pays my bills. This right now is my hobby, and it's something that I'm passionate about because I care for my country. And I'm tired of seeing the duopoly just run roughshod over the average American, you know. I look at that average American and I see a lot of people in my, you know, family, such as aunts, uncles, grandfathers, you know, who were really dumped on by the system over the years, had their livelihoods taken away, jobs outsourced. So, you know, I look at that and I see people who I care about, and, you know, I see what could happen, and I want to, you know, say my part. And another thing is, I want to see the point where people can actually talk again, you know. So, like, I'm working on a video right now. I just had two ladies on Friday, and, you know, they were talking about, like, MPP stuff, for example. And, you know, I can tell you right now, they're probably more on the progressive side than I am. But you got to be able to have these conversations. And, you know, right. Society and the mainstream media have done a very fine job of making it so people don't want to talk, you know. And so that's my goal. I'm going to keep shooting it straight. And then, you know, if someone, you know, if it takes off one day, that's absolutely great, you know, but only time will tell on that. But, you know, I don't write my content. I don't, you know, sit down and prepare like, oh, what word should I say for this? You know, I just go as the show goes on. We shoot straight and we have conversation, you know, that and that's the best way to do it. You know, I don't need a speech writer. I'm just going to, you know, call it like I see it and just tell the truth on every video. And, you know, that's the best way to do things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you stuck out to me pretty early on because you were obviously someone who did your own thinking and wasn't taking notes from somebody else and just basically plagiarizing whatever they said. You know, that's right. Pretty rare. I mean, there are a lot of charlatans and copycats on the low levels too, like people who have several hundred subscribers. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize like how many bad actors there are out there. And you've been smeared too by some of these bad actors, you know, and I have too. And what's funny is they'll scream at us from behind a keyboard and then we'll say, hey, you want to come on the show and talk about this? And then suddenly they disappear into the woodwork. And that's pretty telling.
Oh, yeah. And claim that I only want them on show for viewership on my channel.
Right. When they have a couple hundred subscribers sometimes, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm only at around the 600 mark myself. But, you know, some of the people who say that, even worse than only having 100 or 200 subscribers, some of them don't even have a channel.
Right.
And so I'm sitting there just like, you know, hey, if you're really interested in politics, if you're considering this at all, this could be an opportunity for you. What do you think you're going to go on? The Jimmy Dore show?
Right.
Like, you don't even have a YouTube channel, you know, unless you know the guy, he's probably not going to bring you on his show. You got to start somewhere. So if you think your case is better than mine, here's an open door. Come on my show and change my mind. You know, if you come on my show and show you're more intelligent than I am, what do you have to lose? You know, you have everything to gain and I have the most to lose. You're coming on my own show. And if you can make me look foolish, then that's only harming me.
Right.
You know, but hopefully we could have a more decent conversation than to quote unquote make either one of us look foolish. Maybe we can have a good conversation here. But no, it's, you know, that's one of the problems. And this is what I'm talking about between the right and the left not being able to have a conversation. One of the big sticking points on where the whole thing falls apart is the people who believe that socialism and communism is the only way forward. And if you support capitalism, then you're basically brainwashed, propagandized, you're a fool. I don't fall in that camp. I think that either one has an opportunity, if it's not kind of watched and handled properly, to go amok. But I see it happening way more easily under complete socialism or communism than I do under capitalism. You know, me and you've debated, and maybe some people think this is right, maybe some people think it is wrong, but you know, I say this, there's a greed in man. It's been there for hundreds of years, you know, if even thousands of years. It's just a natural thing for survival of the fittest that's within humans to take more to try to, you know, have better chances of survival. Any economic system has an opportunity because of that greed to get corruption in if certain checks are not put in place to make sure that it's a fair playing field. And that goes just as much for capitalism, really, as anything else. But between what I've seen, I believe capitalism to be the best option to incentivize people to try and also reap benefits and have reward for your success, rather than a system that tells everyone you're all going to win a trophy, you're all going to be wealthy, and it doesn't matter really how much harder you try than the other person, you're all going to have every one of your needs taken care of. So put in minimal effort, maximum effort, doesn't matter. You're all going to get the same thing at the end of the day, basically. I don't see that working out for society at all. And that's basically the argument I keep hearing from the people who go to communism. But again, the minute you try to have that conversation, it just falls apart completely, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, not even like major topics, just like minor differences sometimes can be black and white for everybody and do or die, you know. I mean, it can be the most asinine stuff that people will throw an alliance in the trash over. You know, even in the libertarian movement, where we agree on 99 or 95% of the issues, like if you have a different idea of how we should phase something out or something, then you're a statist. You know, and it's just not productive. I mean, that's not how you convince someone you're right, first of all. And it also proves that you don't really know your philosophy inside and out if you can't discuss why you disagree on a certain topic or explain to someone why they might be wrong. If you just resort to name calling or, you know, just writing people off as some category that you don't like, then, you know, you're not going to be very effective at recruiting people to your side.
Right. Yeah, I've had actually someone who recently, when I was doing some of the Unity Through Music segments, for example, he wound up referring to the patriotic working class, was the exact words, as cucks. Okay. And another thing he mentioned, and so this is my stance on the troops, you know, and people might disagree with me on this, but I don't hold the troops responsible for the wars I disagree with. You know, some people have their reasons for joining the military. And with the day's climate, with the way, you know, the government has structured everything, sometimes one of the best ways you can find a job that pays halfway decent money and gives you good benefits is by joining the military. It's almost like it was done that way by design.
It was.
Of course.
For sure.
But that being said, you know, you've got that on one hand, and then you've got other people who, you know, and I believe you yourself, Reed, at one point, even talk about when you first got into politics, you truly kind of bought along with what you heard a lot of the Republican Party talking about, for example, right? And people might genuinely believe that by joining the military to go to Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, that they were truly serving their country and defending us from the terrorists. Okay. So I can't fault them necessarily for that. I mean, you know, true, we could sit here and say that a lot of that stuff was propaganda. You know, Iraq didn't have the weapons of mass destruction. But I think it's pretty obvious. Not the average man and woman does that much digging into stuff. That's why we still have the duopoly today. Okay. Right. So I don't fault the veterans. And if anything, I say we should at least respect the veterans for being the veterans. And I don't like disrespect of veterans, especially coming from, you know, family where, you know, I've had a lot of family members who've served. Grandpa, too, actually, that served in World War II. I never met my biological one. He was dead before I was born. But he himself was in World War II. But, you know, that's my stance. And then, like I said, this guy was referring to, like, the patriotic, you know, working class as cucks for the system and this and that. And the whole time this guy is, you know, communist to the T. He's got, like, the Soviet USSR pictures, like his profile photo. He's got, like, two videos on his own channel. And the most recent video he posted was, like, the Soviet national anthem. Right. I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, I'm like, so the patriotic working class are according to you, are cucks. Right. But, you know, I'm guessing you're going to go based on how bad the U.S. is because of U.S. imperialism and all the people that the troops went off to kill because of, you know, profiteering and this and that. Okay, fair enough point. So patriotic working class are cucks. Stalin killed a lot of people. Okay, the USSR eventually became a failed state. I'm questioning whether you've actually lived in the USSR or not. And if you didn't, and you're telling us how great it is, doesn't that just make you a Soviet cuck at this point? But, you know, that's the thing is, the conversation should never get to that point. It shouldn't. I mean, we can have a civil conversation about whether joining the military is the right thing to do. You know, should we hold people responsible for joining the military? You know, have the conversation. But when you start calling working class patriotic people cucks, that at that point, you're going beyond the lines, honestly, in my opinion, of conversation, because how many people are going to kind of take that to heart like me? You know, I have a lot of blue collar working class people in my family who don't walk around hating the country. Now, they're not pleased with the politicians. They don't like the rich, you know, quote unquote, fat cats at the top who are controlling a lot of the power and money, like Bezos and others. But they, at the end of the day, would still say, I'm proud to be an American and I love my country. You know, and so I look at it as this, you know, we got the people who have the power in the country, but the reason I don't walk around, quote unquote, hating my country is because while they have gotten the power and they have the money, do I look at them as being the group that makes up the country? Because there's less of them than there are the average man and woman out there. There's a lot more of us. And at the end of the day, even if we don't have the quote unquote money and power, we're really what is still making the country tick. You know, if the trucks weren't on the road moving freight around, the 18-wheelers, this country would fall apart. If there weren't people working in the warehouses to turn things out, that, I mean, true, they're moving more automation in that direction, but you still need people. You still need people to work on those machines. If you don't have those people, the people that don't go home and, you know, drink, you know, $500 wines and eat caviar at night, the people who have to just go home and, you know, eat a hamburger or whatever, these are the folks that make the country run. And so to me, they are the true embodiment of America. And I want to see the point where that middle class thrives again. And, you know, it's a more fair playing field. You know, not something that's just controlled by the elites.
Yeah. So since Biden's become president, which has happened since you were on the show last time, maybe we were trying to figure out.
Yeah.
We can't remember if it was late January or early February, but basically Biden took over sometime in that stretch. What have your main concerns been about the way this country's headed? To me, they haven't really changed. It was sort of dressing around the edges, you know, like I mean last year I was worried about authoritarianism and lockdowns and the Constitution just basically being a dead document, and honestly the events of the last year have kind of given me the black pill, turned me into a bit of an anarchist, because you know, if you want to see how perfectly useless the Constitution is, just observe 2020 and you see that it doesn't do anything to protect us. But what have your main concerns been with the trajectory of our country over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months?
Well, the first is what I pretty much, you know, I saw this coming a mile away if Biden took office, was that censorship, I said, would get worse, and it did. Mm-hmm. It's not like Trump really stopped it, but at least he was speaking out more about it, which kind of put pressure on him to not try to shut people up so much and silence them. Like I said, it still happened. But, you know, at least there was a voice in the room talking about it. And you lost that, especially after, you know, they kicked Trump off Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. Now You know, of course, if he still had access to that, he'd just be out of office. He'd still be talking about it, tweeting about it, whatever. But no, they shut him up, and then they went into and they went after a lot of other channels, either yanked their monetization or whatever. So that was problem number one. Problem number two was another thing I saw coming from a mile away. I don't think Joe is actually running anything. I think it's Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think Joe is really capable, honestly, for doing half this stuff. That's why there's been instances where every time he's somewhere, she's there too to give her speech, or, you know, something he'll task off on her like she put it together. You've had the videos that's kind of surfaced around where he's signing executive orders, and it almost sounds like he says kind of under his breath, and the cameras almost picked it up, but it sounds like he said,
"What is this again?
Yeah, like, what is this? I don't even know what I'm signing."
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you know, you know. But the first thing that popped through my head when I saw that clip was the Simpsons movie, where they have the Arnold Schwarzenegger president, and they're putting the three plans down in front of him and wanting him to figure out which one he wants. And they're telling him to read them. And he's just like, "I was elected to lead, not to read." And then just points to, you know, number three.
Yeah.
That sounds like where we're at this point. I mean, it's that bad. But furthermore than that, you know, for example, we heard about nothing but Russia. Nothing but Russia for 4 years under Donald Trump. And then, as it turns out, even though this wasn't necessarily the Russian government, but the recent gas stuff, you know, I don't know if that really affected you much out there, but down here in my neck of the woods, gas soared about a week or two ago. You had that
running out of it in North Carolina, right? Just north.
South Carolina, yeah. But, yeah. It took out, like, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia.
Yeah.
Everybody was panic purchasing gasoline. Gas went up. If you could find it, there were a bunch of stations who ran out of gas. I even saw people trying to fill up trash bags with gasoline. Okay. And of course, there were a few cars who wound up exploding as a result of this. But, you know, it turns out it was a Russian company who hacked Colonial Pipeline. And that really exposed a problem. A lot of the people who control, say, the gas pipelines or the power that comes to your home, in my case, Duke Energy, Spartanburg Water or whatever, right? These are private companies. They're not controlled by the federal government, which means their cybersecurity has to be handled privately. The government is not running any kind of interference to protect them from, quote unquote, being hacked. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if another private entity, not even a government agency, not even the Russian government necessarily, at least to our knowledge, could hack this and shut this down and cause that much chaos, what do you think the Russian government or the Chinese government would be capable of doing if they ever got pissed at us? So that really exposed a problem there, right? It's like, why is the government, you know, the government should have a limited role, but one thing they should be doing is truly trying to protect the interests of the country. Maybe infrastructure would be a good part of that, and your utilities, right? You know, if we lost or had a possible shortage of gas, people went that crazy. What do you think they'd do if they lost power for a week or two? Like, if they had a power grid, I mean. So, of course, Biden signs his executive order, but then you read into the executive order and you find out he pretty much changed nothing. Mm-hmm. It was focusing on the government stuff, like we're going to beef up government security, but it did nothing to try to give any of that security to those companies to prevent them from being hacked. So it changed nothing. And I think there was a report, at least about 80% of the utilities in the countries in our country are private businesses. So you change nothing. You know, if I had to summarize the change from going to Trump to Biden, to give a good Southern analogy here, Reed, it's like putting lipstick on a pig at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. What did you really do?
Yeah. Well, I know you want infrastructure spending and all, but, you know, what about gender studies in Pakistan? That's kind of, you know, more of a priority, I think.
Yeah, you know, this world won't be a complete place until we do that crap.
Yeah.
You know.
Gender studies for people who throw gays off of roofs, you know, like that's Jesus. I'm not sure what the gender studies are like over there, but
you know, it's like something I was telling Eric Jackman from Jackman Radio. I had him on my show a little over a week ago.
Yeah.
And you know, say what you want about China. I don't agree with the economic style and everything, but they have outthought our politicians in so many ways possible. You know, we've been trying to gain power and influence and resources from other country through regime change wars, dropping bombs, shooting guns, firing missiles, and stacking up bodies. That's been our way of doing it. You know what theirs was? Infrastructure. They've not only built, you know, so much infrastructure in their own country, but they went to the point through the Belt Road Initiative. They've pretty much bought up Africa. They're building all this infrastructure in all these countries. And you know, the only time we build infrastructure in those countries is when we're putting in our own military base and we have to build infrastructure around it. There was like a report from two or so years back where we wanted to build a military base in Niger, but we have to build surrounding infrastructure to support it before we can really, you know, build the base. Yet we can't take care of any infrastructure here. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the super chat, Marshall. I appreciate it. Yeah, dude. Like anyone who's really paying attention can realize we're going the way of Rome pretty fast. I feel like even my neocon friends realize it. You know, so few of them are still on board with expanding the empire. And, you know, it was a little bit of a I had a little bit of optimism after seeing Trump try to go to war with Iran, you know, a little over a year ago. Like, it was so obvious that nobody really wanted to do it. And there were a lot of Republicans banging the war drum, but anyone with half a brain was just like, really? Like, why go to another war? And then when Biden bombed Syria his first month in office, a lot of Democrats were upset. Like, and I don't even just mean progressive, like far left wingers. I mean, like regular standard Democrats. They're like,
yeah,
why, you know, why are we doing this? So I think, the public is sick of it. You know, I mean, when, even if you have a completely anti-war message against the war on terrorism and everything, like Scott Horton, you know, that resonates with your average person now when they hear someone like him talk. Right. I don't think it's radical anymore. People are like, yeah, get us out of there. Stop, you know, stop creating all these problems. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's too late, but I at least feel optimistic that people are sick of it.
Yeah, they definitely are, you know, but the question is going to come down to now, you know, Biden set his withdrawal date back to around fall or so of this year. Then now the question is he really going to follow through with pulling out of Afghanistan? And then is he really going to pull out everyone? Is he just going to pull out the quote unquote troops, or is he going to pull out like CIA, the contractors, the whole nine yards? Is he really doing a complete withdrawal, or just like the base level type deal? But then you've got to turn back and reference to the fact that there was a report that came out. And to be fair, think what you want about Kyle. I don't like what he says all the time or agree with it. But he had a video not too long ago on a secular talk, and he was talking about how there was a report that came out that Trump, and this sounds like something Trump would do. This sounds like a very Trump thing, you know, just because he's like, okay, I'm on my way out the door. I couldn't win the court cases. I'm not going to be able to keep office. So to try to save face and get some popularity on my way out the door, I'll do something that the people will like. It wasn't pardoning Assange, but he apparently tried to withdraw from Afghanistan, and he ordered the Pentagon, like, start withdrawing troops now, like, go ahead and pull them out. And supposedly the generals in the Pentagon were just basically like, no, we're not. We're not going to pull them out. Screw you. Which that should scare the hell out of everyone. You know, we don't live under martial law. officially. You could argue whether they're implementing it, and kind of they are, like with all the restrictions that were put in place through the pandemic and stuff last year. A lot of that really constitutionally they couldn't do without invoking martial law. But they did anyway. And the president is supposed to be the commander in chief of the military, which means that the Pentagon generals and the Joint Chiefs of Staff don't just have the authority, since they're non-elected officials in the first place, to tell the president, you know, to go pound sand about pulling the troops out of a war. That's not their decision. They can give their opinion. They can give their influence. But they don't have the right to just go forward with it on their own, or to tell them, no, we're not going to pull out on their own either. That's kind of like if you read the whole Operation Northwoods thing. The Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to carry it out in the 60s. Kennedy told them no. That would have been the equivalent of them saying, well, screw it, we're going to do it anyway because we want to go to war with Castro, you know? That's one thing. You know, so will Biden truly pull out? I've got my doubts. If they didn't let Trump do it, why are they going to let Biden do it? I'm looking for, the closer we get, something is going to happen, and then they're going to go, oh, well, see, the mission's not over. We got to carry on. We haven't liberated Afghanistan enough. They need more freedom. Okay. I'm looking for something like that to happen. Honestly, I'm hoping it doesn't, but I'm looking that it's very likely to happen. You know, the other thing is going to be, and I was watching one of your recent videos. I don't remember who exactly made this point. I don't remember. I might've been Dave Smith, but I can't remember for sure. But I'm questioning if it's finally to the point where even the war hawks are realizing that with the shape the country is in, with all the little, not even just the major wars, but other little conflicts we've already got our noses in, can the U.S. even sustain carrying on another war right now?
Yeah.
And is that the reason why one hasn't popped up beforehand? And if they do allow a withdrawal from Afghanistan, is it just going to be because they finally found their next target that they do want to go to war in? So we've got to withdraw from one to start war in another.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that's also in the back of my mind. But
yeah, there's no way the war hawks at the top are going to let it go away, because I mean, it's their money basket, you know, like they don't want it to disappear. I think that they just can't hide it from the people anymore, that it's not working. I think the majority of the people are sick of it. But I think that's kind of pointing to what a failed state we have. If the people are sick of it, and you had a president who, you know, I actually believe that Trump didn't want to be over there. You know, I don't think he was morally opposed to killing people, but I think he didn't want, I don't think he buys into the neoconservative idea that we fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. I really don't think he believed that. But it didn't matter. Like, you have people who don't believe that. You had a president who didn't believe that. Who cares? You know? So people are still, like, focusing on who is going to be president in 4 years. And this has really been a switch that I've finally gone through over the last several months, but really over the last year. I remember thinking with both Tulsi and Joe Jorgensen, like, okay, if we somehow win, then what? You know, we get, and you talked about this a lot too. You talked about how, you know, if you have Congress who impeached, they impeached Trump for bullshit reasons, and it was only because of his rhetoric, you know, like it was only because he sounded like a threat and they wanted him out of there, and they tried to impeach him again so he couldn't run again. You know, like, I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. If you got Joe Jorgensen or Tulsi Gabbard or Ron Paul or someone like that in office, they would get rid of them so fast. They would find some stupid thing to impeach them over. And if they couldn't do that, they'd give them a car ride through Dallas.
or just simply gridlock them for 4 years to where their popularity tanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that running for president is still an important thing, because unfortunately that's the only way you ever grab anybody's attention. Like, that's how, I mean, the end the Fed thing was because of a presidential run. Ending the wars was because of a presidential run. whatever, choose your issue, Medicare for all was because of a presidential run. Like, none of those things were on the national stage until somebody ran for president. So it does matter, but people have to stop thinking that we're going to get a person in there who's going to change everything from the top down. They've got to start looking at it as a way of raising awareness to the entire country of the system and how broken it is and what the problems are. But I see so many people, you know, like, oh, if Tulsi had won, we'd be fine now. Or like, oh, you know, hopefully so-and-so runs again so that we can get them in there. And it's just like, I don't know how much it's going to take for people to realize that that's not going to work.
No, I've seen the Tulsi stuff out there, and I'm not going to, you know, push too hard on that just because I'm in the camp. I think things might have been slightly better, at least. I don't think we would have seen a lot of the shenanigans that we've seen since Biden took office if, say, Tulsi got elected. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you're going to see a world of change, you know, either. Right. It's constitutionally not within the power of the president to just govern all by themselves. Now, some are going to say, well, Bush did it. Obama did it. Trump did it. Look how many executive orders Biden has signed. Okay. And, you know, when Obama was doing it, what did the Republicans keep saying about that? Like, oh, he's abusing his power. He's abusing his power.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be the way of bypassing Congress to do whatever you want to do. That's not what you're supposed to be doing with that office. It's the commander in chief of the military. It's got some power, but not complete autonomy from Capitol Hill. And that's why Congress also has the power of overriding vetoes. They can still even override the president even, right? So, you know, it's like you pointed out. If you have no backbone, and I made this point in the video with the ladies I interviewed on Friday for the MPP interview there. If they have no backbone, they're dead in the water, okay? You've got to have some power at the Senate and the House. You don't have to even have a ton. Take a lesson from what the force to vote people were talking about when they wanted AOC and all those guys to just say, we're not going to vote for Nancy Pelosi if you don't put this at least on the table for a vote and use your leverage. Okay, if you got, I don't know, 3-4 senators elected to the Senate and you got a few House, people elected. 3 or 4 senators could really cog up the machine and say, we're not going to vote for it unless we get these things right here. And if the votes can't be achieved, the country shuts down. Now, they could try to blame that on the Senate. And of course, mainstream media is going to take the Democrats and the Republican side. But if they got the airtime to go out to the public and say, no, this is what we're pushing for. We're pushing for the good policy here. They had all this, you know, loaded fat in this bill, extra spending that did nothing for you, the average American. We want to take some of that and channel it back over here to help our country. And if they're able to get that message out there, they're going to have to finally start doing right by the people. You can't achieve that level of power just through the presidency. You've got to take the real power game away. The presidency is important. But potentially before we can even real have a real shot at the presidency, you've got to take state legislatures and you've got to take the House and the Senate. And for a long time, I just said House and the Senate. Something changed my mind about that last election. You heard all the concerns from the right and the Trump side of the aisle about election integrity and how secure is the election. A lot of that's what led to the January 6th stuff, right?
Right.
Well, turns out there's also people who say third parties don't really have a chance because of the way the election laws are set up in those states. So, okay, we'll go with that argument. And then we'll look at what happened on January 6th. And then, of course, Republicans to an extent are still beating that drum. I don't know if you saw the article, but there's an article going around right now about, I guess they just had a round of Pennsylvania primaries and the Dominion machines had a glitch on the top. Instead of saying Republican on the Republican ticket, it said Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that then triggered a bunch of people go like, oh, see these machines, see something's wrong here. That says Democrat. My vote, this very easily could have been a whole, you know, debacle last year. So if the elections have any issue, you know, regardless of fraud, take fraud out of the equation. If it's going to be hard for third parties to win, and the Supreme Court basically said last year, even some of the Republicans were saying last year, they didn't want the federal government to get involved in how states run their elections, that that's a state's thing. If we're going to go based on that, then you've got to take over the state legislatures. How else are you going to reform those election laws to really give third parties a chance at the national level? And more than likely, you might stand more of a chance for picking off these smaller offices. Here's going to be the trick, though. It's kind of like if you ever watch the HBO series John Adams, and they're talking about how to get, you know, the all 13 colonies to join on for the revolution. Basically, the phrase he used was all 13 clocks have to strike at once. Okay, right now, if you go through the game plan of targeting state houses, you probably got a good chance, better than you do with the more federal national stuff, right? Because the money isn't being pumped into those elections as much.
Yeah.
But if the status quo caught on to what you're doing, and you can't, it's got to be like a massive power grab to take that power away at once. If it's done slowly, they're going to take notice. Once they take notice, there'll be ad campaigns run coast to coast in whatever state you're trying to make a change in. CNN, all the news networks, you know, criticize Bernie for what you want. I think he sold out. But one thing he at least had the guts to say was when everyone was bashing his, you know, his policies on, like, say, Medicare for All and Big Pharma. Or think what you want about him, but as he pointed out, as soon as this debate goes to commercial break, you're going to see not only ads for more pills, but you're going to see ads that are paid for by these companies who make the pills telling you why this is such a bad idea. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen going forward. If they figure out where you're putting your effort at and you're doing it too slow, they're just going to shift that money to then try to stop you from winning those elections. They're going to use their money and power to protect their assets. So it's going to have to go under the radar. You're going to have to take the power away at that level quick. And then if you secure enough states, reform those laws, and then you've got to try to pick off the House, the Senate. And so, you know, me and you, Reed, you know, we lean more toward the Libertarian Party. I said this last year, I'm going to say it again. The Libertarian Party, you know, just shit the bed in 2020, not because of Joe Jorgensen or anything else. I mean, we could have that conversation, but for one reason in particular, there was no Libertarian candidate to run for the Senate in South Carolina. And Lindsey Graham was up for election. That is a completely missed opportunity. Republicans in South Carolina are tired of Lindsey Graham. That's why Chuck Schumer and company sent Jamie Harrison here to try and run for that office, because they thought they could finally pick off Lindsey Graham. They had a serious chance at it. People are tired of Lindsey Graham, but they were not tired enough of Lindsey Graham that they were willing to vote for someone that used to be a Democrat lobbyist. So Lindsey Graham won again. And the only other competition to the two of them was this guy like a Bledsoe, who was of the Constitution Party. That's like a fraction of the size of the Libertarian Party. This is a red state, okay, which means they're more leaning toward conservative type views and ideals, which means of the two really, I guess, serious third parties, the Libertarian and the Green Party, the Libertarian Party would have had probably about the best chance to be the third party that could win in this state, okay? They've got more name recognition. I've heard people, when I talk third parties in South Carolina, mention the Libertarian Party. You don't hear the Constitution Party come up that much. Yeah. And before we even got to Election Day, Bledsoe, of course, dropped out and endorsed Lindsey Graham. So, I mean, I had no other choice to vote for when I went. I wasn't going to vote for Lindsey Graham, but I voted for Bledsoe. But since he endorsed Lindsey Graham, kind of, in a way, I was voting for Lindsey Graham.
Right.
And that pisses me off. You know, I wanted to vote third party. I don't like voting for the duopoly. So, and the Senate doesn't come around that often. It's not like the House where it's every 2 years. The president's even every 4 years. You get these opportunities fewer. There's right. also fewer seats to win in the Senate than there are in the House. There's only 100 total, right? Two per state. That was there for the taking. It was an opportunity, and the Libertarian Party just sat on their hands. So, you know, I want to see the Libertarian Party do a lot better. I think that is right now, as things stand, the best chance of a third party that can actually win something. You know, and another thing I would like to see happen, and, you know, people think what they want. I know right now he's more in line with the Green Party. Something else I want to see the Libertarian Party do is try to reach back out to Governor Ventura, try to pull him back toward the fold. It's something I made a point of on Friday with the two ladies, Renee and Lisa. This MPP stuff, if we're going to build a serious third party, might be kind of a good idea here to pull someone into the fold who not only ran on a third party ticket, but won.
Yeah. And
Governor Ventura won. Okay. He knows how to do it. He knew how to use charisma. He was charismatic. He was able to rally a crowd. He credits that to obviously his knowledge of how to work a crowd from professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, and to be fair, who went to visit Ventura? I guess what I'm trying to say. Donald Trump. Donald Trump went and took notes from the man. And then, of course, he used that when he ran in 2016. It was like a page out of Ventura's own playbook, the stuff he was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and Ventura kind of did the same thing. He didn't go extremely deep into these subjects and, like, try to break it down like some political analyst. He talked in a way where he was just talking to that ordinary man and woman and saying, you know, if I don't know the answer, I'm going to tell you I don't know the answer, but I'll find it out. I'm willing to be honest enough with you to let you know, and we'll figure the answer out. And he didn't necessarily say like exactly how he's going to do all these things. He's just saying that the two-party system, it's dumping all over us. We need someone to come in and shake it up. That's the only kind of thing he had to say, and it really caught on, you know. Yeah. And so if you really want to take things serious, get people. Because Ventura, you know, at one point was going to vote for the Libertarian Party, for Gary Johnson. He kind of switched, I think, in 16 and switched to Jill Stein. But pull him back in the fold. You need to bring people like that in who have this name recognition, not just to necessarily run a celebrity to be president, but you need people with the name recognition to help get that message out there because more people know who they are. And if they're listening to them and they're like, oh, so this guy actually supports this, then that piques their curiosity. They want to know more about it. And then you have a better chance of winning them over.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's kind of old to run, but even if you bring him in just as a figurehead or someone
absolutely,
to talk about things that you agree with him on, because he was a Ron Paul supporter and a Gary Johnson supporter. So,
absolutely. You
know, yeah, maybe he doesn't agree with us on everything, but. You know, people got to stop thinking that way. You know, you
got to
build coalitions and focus on the big issues that matter. And I think you're right about the state houses. That's really where I think the focus should be. Defend the guard legislation so that they can't send National Guard over to war without actually declaring war. You know, and Second Amendment sanctuary cities, you know, whatever, like just defy the federal government. Just tell them that you're not going to do what you think you want to do here. You know, do it with everything. I want to see it with income tax, you know, everything. Like, we got to drown the beast, or, you know, drown's the wrong word. We got to starve the beast because
absolutely.
That's how it's maintaining its power. It doesn't give a shit about what we do. So if we starve it, then it'll have to pay attention or die.
Right.
And the other thing is, you know, you were talking about how constitutionally the president can't really change that much. Even the stuff that the president constitutionally is allowed to do, he can't do now. You know, like you were pointing to that with Trump trying to pull us out of Afghanistan. That is his role, and he couldn't do it. So yeah, it's got to be a grassroots bottom up starvation of the machine. But we're coming up on an hour, so I'll just we'll close it off there. But I'll let you give any last final thoughts. You got anything else you want to get out there? I've got your YouTube channel and your Twitter page linked in the description. I highly recommend everyone that you go check this guy out. We've been friends for a while. He's been a thoughtful counterpart. You can go back in the history of my YouTube channel and you'll find him several times. We've had discussions. So definitely go check him out. But Charles, anything else you want to plug or anything else you want to say?
Yeah. One last thing that I'll say before I close out here, you know, we've been talking about building the third parties and the voting, and you know, there's a lot of people who don't know if it's ever going to truly happen. Like I said, I've still got hope, but in the event things don't work out for the third party, we can't build a unity movement, there's a lot of people who are wondering how they can try to get some sort of change if they can't get third parties elected. And you know, this is going to take discipline on society as well if they're going to do it this way. But, you know, a lot of people complain about the big, you know, fat cats who own the corporations such as Walmart, Amazon, all these things, right? Okay. You know, a lot of the reason the small businessman was put out was because of these big chains. You know, people weren't continuing to buy local. They appreciated the one-stop shop, the convenience and the easiness of it. They took the path that was the most convenient for themselves and they went to the big stores. If you believe that the rich people who own these corporations are just buying off way too much power and influence in the federal government like Bezos, and he's not paying any taxes and getting money back, start learning to let what money you have protest. It's going to do a lot more in some cases than just walking through the streets carrying a sign. Not to say that doesn't do any good, but if people stop shopping at Amazon, you know, like if you see a product that Amazon has for sale and then you see who makes it and who sells it, and instead of buying it through Amazon, go to their website and buy it straight from them, you might lose out on 2-day free shipping. But guess what? You know, either it's important enough to you to make the protest or it's not. So do things like that. You know, it's something like Gene Epstein has brought up some of his debates at the Soho Forum. You know, let your money protest for you. Don't purchase from these people that you believe are causing the problems. There might be a little level of inconvenience there. And of course, you know, as far as like food and stuff like that, if the only thing you've got nearby for a grocery store for your food is Walmart and you can't really afford to go out of town, I mean, you know, don't starve yourself.
Right.
But do what you can to protest that. If we can't do this through the election process, there's other ways constitutionally you're allowed to do it. You know, free speech. They say free speech covers money for, you know, super PACs for these corporations. So let your free speech incorporate your money and where you spend it. You know, if you got a boycott, boycott. And if enough people do it, then people will take notice. Okay. And then there will be a problem there at that point. So that's one last thing I want to say on that. But yeah, you know, it's been a pleasure to come back on. Thank you for having me on, Reed. You know, if you want to check me out, you're Vigilant into P1 over on Twitter, the Lone Wolf Podcast on YouTube, and I'm also now on Daily Motion, Rumble, and Odyssey, all under the Lone Wolf Podcast.
All right. Yeah, go check them out, guys. I will be streaming, let's see, Thursday with Spike Cohen again. But Tuesday, I'll be on Lions of Liberty with Clint from Liberty Lockdown. I'm not sure when that airs. I don't know if they do that live for members and then release it later, but stay tuned for that. And then I've got some big names coming down the pipe. If you're new over here, please subscribe to the channel. Love to have you. And thank you, Charles, for coming on. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Reed.